if you're thinking about donating money to the people of Houston, my next guest says that is a great impulse, but be careful how you think about your donations. Amy Costello is the founder and managing editor of a podcast called Tiny Spark. She reports on philanthropy and nonprofits and international aid. Amy, welcome to KUOW.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
So how should we think about our donations to Southeast Texas?
Well, you know, I think your last guest, Scott Hines, was an excellent example of the kind of experts you want to be giving to at this phase. He clearly demonstrates a deep knowledge of his work, his very specific work in helping people get out of their homes. He's with a team of people who know what they're doing. He's not fly-by-night going there by himself with a boat. So there's a lot of good indications. Those are the kinds of organizations and the kinds of skills that you're looking for. The fact of the matter is, this is in the very early stages of what's going to be a very long-term recovery, and we don't yet know what specific skills are going to be needed as this community begins to recover. And so I think what you want to look for are people who have done that specific kind of work in the past, have shown themselves to be effective, and who have deep knowledge and expertise about the specific work they're carrying out.
Isn't there somebody else who does this work for us, Amy? What's wrong with just writing a check to whoever, the Red Cross or whatever organization you figure is going to find out where it should go?
Well, you know, the Red Cross has a very specific kind of work that it does, which is disaster relief. They've proven themselves to be good at times at giving things like water, blankets, and shelter to people who need it. And so if that is the need that you want to support, you want to go to an organization that does that kind of work. As far as I know, there's other organizations who will be able to help people rebuild homes, who will be able to help, you know, drain schools that are flooded, who will provide counseling and trauma therapy to people who have lost their homes. You know, there's all kinds of myriad issues that are going to arise, and I think it's important for donors to do a little bit of research, for them to decide what part of the recovery they would like to fund, and make sure that the organization that they're giving to, you know, kind of what I say is kind of staying in their lane. There can be, when a lot of money comes to an organization, there can be a tendency to want to try to do all kinds of things, and I don't think that's appropriate. We need experts who know what they're doing to deliver a very specific kind of relief or recovery.
So you're saying the donor needs to do some research. What is the best way to do that research?
Well, I mean, I think right now one of the problems with the nonprofit sector is that most of the money goes to a relative handful of nonprofits working in the sector. There are many small grassroots organizations working in communities there in Seattle, in Houston, in other places that know the community well, that is trusted by the community, and can carry out work on their behalf and in partnership with them. And so I think, one thing you can do is to give to, the Red Cross is the one that comes to mind. They get the lion's share of donations in events like this. But as many of your, listeners know, there's been some investigations into their work and questions made about their ability to respond meaningfully to a disaster of this size. And so I do think it's important for donors to look at other organizations as well, who can deliver maybe on a smaller scale to a certain community. There's different websites that you can go to, GuideStar being one of them, where you can look at nonprofits' tax returns. Charity Navigator is another one that rates nonprofits. These are all, starting points. But I also really think it's important that donors ideally keep their eyes on the long-term recovery of this community, because right now we're all enthusiastic and want to try to help. The fact of the matter is these people are going to need help for months, if not years. And so one thing to think about is, can you become a sustaining donor? Can you donate this month? But how about December? And how about next year? Can you just have a small debit card donation given to a good nonprofit so that they can count on your donation in the very difficult years ahead, after a lot of us and all the cameras have left the area, to help continue to help the people who are going to need our help clearly well beyond, this month?
Yeah, I want to ask you about that, Amy. First of all, since we mentioned the Red Cross, NPR has been doing good work reporting, and so have others, on pros and some cons with the Red Cross's work and also some ways to help. So we are going to tweet out to our listeners right now a useful link or two where that'll help you help the people of Southeast Texas. So join us on Twitter at KUOW. Now, Amy Costello from Tiny Spark Podcast, you were just telling us that there can be a problem with sending your money in now and not later. You mentioned a recurring donation. That makes sense. Can you tell us what is wrong with a bunch of money and donations coming in right now at the beginning of a disaster?
Well, you want your money to be able to flow out into the sector, right? You want your money to flow out kind of relatively quickly to people who need it. And then so it's going to, you know, windfalls of money can be seen as a great thing at a time like this, but they can also present an incredible challenge to organizations just being able to handle that kind of money and get it out in a responsible manner. And so, you know, while we have an immediate crisis before us, and I would, you know, the other thing I just tweeted out talking of Twitter is I have asked the Red Cross what their fundraising goal is, and I'm not sure if they've said what it is yet or not. I don't know which of these organizations people are giving to, if they have a stated fundraising goal, and once they've met that goal, is it time to cut off the fundraising campaign? Because, and that's what the Doctors Without Borders did in Haiti after the earthquake. They raised enough money and they said, thank you so much. We don't need any more. That's all we need. And so I think it's important to think about, can these organizations handle an influx of cash right now? Hopefully they can, but that can be a challenge. And that's why I think if organizations, certainly when they meet their fundraising goal, you can think, okay, well, they've met it for now, but they're going to need help 6 months down the road, a year down the road. Why don't I wait and see what the needs are? We're hearing about a chemical spill now in Houston. What kind of organizations are going to need to come up to clean up that and to make people safe? A very different kind of organization, most likely, than the Red Cross. Highly specialized. Can we help them? You know, so I think a little bit of prudence and a little bit of waiting to see, once immediate needs are met, where your donor dollars can best be channeled, is kind of a wise course of action.
Okay, just a couple more questions, Amy. You are in Austin, Texas, just a couple of hours' drive from Houston, and you report on philanthropy on your podcast. Why are you not in Houston right now?
Yeah, you know, it's something I've been thinking about a lot in the last few days, and I've been torn about it, but I've also been involved in a number of crisis situations. I worked for 5 years in Africa. And what I'm aware of and is, you know, I've thought to myself, is it a good use of resources for me to go down and be trying to interview people who are trying to deliver aid right now? Is that a good use of their time? And I kind of think that there's people who are very busy on the front lines of this emergency response doing the work they need to do. And I want to let them do that. And, you know, there's plenty of very fine journalists there now covering this disaster in all kinds of ways, and that is great, too. I feel like my role, and kind of like what I'm encouraging your listeners to do, is to just wait a little bit and see how things pan out. I have lots of questions I have about how this donor dollars will be spent over the next months and years. I think those are very important questions to ask. I feel like that's where I can offer my biggest contribution. And to go down now in the midst of an unfolding complex emergency and interview people who are trying to help and their families, well, some organizations are doing that, and I think there's a role for that. I'm not sure that that's my role, but I do know that I do have a role as this crisis unfolds, and I'm very grateful that I am just a few hours drive from Houston, and I plan to go there hopefully several times in the months and years ahead.
What is the most important question you'll be answering on your podcast, The Tiny Spark, about philanthropy?
Well, you know, when I reported from Africa for 5 years, I always flew into busy capitals of different countries and immediately almost got out and went down dirt roads to find people who were the hardest to reach and who had the least access to resources, because I knew that that was where the story always was. Not in the big cities, but out in these harder to access communities. And I think that I'll probably kind of have that lens again, that there's going to be well-resourced communities who get back on their feet very quickly, but there's going to be communities who are struggling mightily before this crisis ever hit, and I can't imagine what their journey will be post-hurricane. So I'm kind of interested in how are the communities that are hardest hit with the least resources being served by these donor dollars, by FEMA, by well-intentioned donors, and just following up and following up and following up and asking well-intentioned people and projects, what are your qualifications? What are you doing? And, you know, and are the people that you say that you're served being served? And I think there is a great role for journalists of all kinds to continue to ask those questions. And I think those are the questions that will emerge, you know, again, in the months and years after this immediate crisis is over.
And Amy, as you do that, as you follow up and follow up and follow up on these good intentions and watchdog these organizations, can we keep checking in with you about just this storm, Harvey, you know, and the aftermath, and find out what you're learning so we can learn about how to effectively help?
I would, and I just think, absolutely, and I just think it's important to say with all my stories, I always try to find out what is working and why and what can we learn from it. So
yeah.
That'll be, again, foremost on my mind is the lessons that we're learning, how we can do this work better, and who's doing it well, and what can we learn from them. So I'll be happy to share those stories with you, too.
What actually works and how to get to them. Amy Costello, managing editor of the Tiny Spark podcast, looking at philanthropy and nonprofit organizations. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you very much.
We're tweeting out a link to Amy's podcast right now, and keep it tuned to KUOW. We'll follow the unfolding events in Houston and Southeast Texas and continue to help you understand your role and what you can do to help. We're going to be right back with KUOW's The Record in a moment.